Well, welcome to our Office 365 Summit. We will be covering today the servicing the existing deployment and upgrading to Skype for Business Server. My name is Brian Nice. I work for Microsoft in their consulting services as a unified communications architect, and I'll be taking you through a couple of different areas throughout this next hour or so that we'll spend together. We basically want to focus on three major components when we talk about servicing and upgrading to Skype for Business Server. The first and relatively obvious one that we're going to talk through is, in fact, upgrading to Skype for Business Server 2015. So we'll talk about what that methodology looks like, what the options are, what the paths are that we need to take from our existing deployments of perhaps 2010 or 2013 to get us to Skype for Business Server 2015. We'll then do a little context shift into the always-on improvements that we've done from the SQL side of the house. So taking us through some of the advantages that we have now for the back-end infrastructure of SQL and what that's going to look like from a planning, deployment, and implementation standpoint. Then we'll round out the agenda by talking about our server management pieces and how we've really made some great strides and improvements to the server management process itself, talking about things such as patching and how we can do a better job with the patching process with Skype for Business Server 2015, and also talking a little bit about the cold pool start and how we've made some improvements there. And anybody that's worked with Link 2013 will know a little bit about the fun that we had when we had to deal with cold pool starts in the 2015 space. So that's kind of a quick look at what we want to go through. So let's dig right into the details and talk about how do we get to Skype for Business Server 2015. One of the major features that we've introduced in Skype for Business Server 2015 is the ability to do an in-place upgrade. And as one would expect, what is it? Well, it's an in-place upgrade. It's the ability to take your existing deployment that you have for Link 2013 and reuse the existing hardware that you have, whether it's physical hardware, whether it's virtual machines, be able to take that and simply in-place upgrade that topology straight to Skype for Business Server. Now, clearly that provides some very obvious benefits. The most obvious one, of course, being that I can just preserve all of the investments that I've already made from the 2013 side to Skype for Business Server. So my existing hardware, my existing server, all of those investments are preserved, allowing me to then get to Skype for Business Server in that fashion. This also gives us a much smoother upgrade process because we don't have a lot of extensive planning to do. Now, that's not to say there isn't still some planning that needs to be done, but we don't have to go through extensive planning as to how the topology is going to change or how we're going to need to redesign or re-architect. We're simply taking that known good topology that we had for 2013 and swapping the bits out, right, and making it Skype for Business Server 2015. This, in turn, should help reduce the overall cost, obviously, for our deployment, with a goal for us to get towards what we will be calling smart setup. And I have a slide in a little bit that talks more about what the smart setup concept is. But essentially, this gives you a nice little summary of why we've made the investments that we've made for in-place upgrade. So that's all the good news. Some of the slightly bad news, if you will, is to talk about how do we get this in-place upgrade process to work. And as you might expect, there are specific scenarios that we have to talk through and specific scenarios that will work and others that will require some intermediary steps. So first off, when we look at our upgrade path, we basically have two avenues that we can take. We have what we call the migrate users mode, which effectively is a way for us to perform this upgrade with no downtime from the user's perspective. Or you also have what we call the offline mode, which would be essentially, as you would expect, taking the pools offline, doing the in-place upgrade in that fashion, and then bringing the pools back online, which of course would introduce some downtime for the users. Now, when we look at either of these modes, we always have to consider where we're coming from and where we're going to. So what is our original topology? And the ideal case, of course, is your original topology is all Link Server 2013. In that case, you have the opportunity to perform the in-place upgrade because you will effectively be ending up with the combination of Skype for Business Server and 2013. You can take your existing 2013 pools and in-place upgrade them straight to Skype for Business Server. It's the most straightforward option that we have. And I'll take you through a few slides coming up here that'll graphically represent what we need to do here. If we have 2010, things are slightly different, right? Because when we do in-place upgrade, that is strictly from the 2013 platform to Skype for Business Server. So if I'm running Link Server 2010, I'm going to have to perform a migration. Much the same as you had done from 2010 to 2013, I'll need to perform that same style of migration from the 2010 platform to Skype for Business Server. The last topology we look at is the case that you're in a mixed or a coexistence type mode. So some of my pools are Link Server 2013, some of my pools are Link Server 2010. How do I get to Skype for Business Server in that fashion? Well, we still do not have a mechanism of support for tri-existence. So as you would expect, as we've done before, I need to get down to a single version before I can perform the migration. So take my 2010 platform, migrate it to 2013, and from there, I can then take the 2013 environment and in-place upgrade it to Skype for Business Server. So those are really the three topologies that we have to focus on. The next series of slides are going to take us through a graphical representation of what that will look like. Our first upgrade path, when we talk about the move user concept, this should be very familiar to folks that have done any type of migration from 2010, 2013, and so forth. Our first case is to look at the ideal environment. I have Link 2013, that's it, and I want to be able to upgrade that to Skype for Business Server. So as you can see in my example here, I have three pools. All of the pools are running Link 2013, a minimum of CU5. They don't have to be running that specific CU, but CU5 or better. All three pools are running Link 2013, and now I'm ready to start the in-place upgrade process for pool one. Before I actually begin the kind of the nuts and bolts clicking around, it's usually a good idea to start with a listing of which users are on which pool. And this is advantageous because as part of the process, you're going to be moving users around from pool to pool, and ideally you want to get them back to their original pool that they started on. So as an example here, I start with pool one. I'll identify the list of users that are on pool one, make note of that, and then I'll just do a simple move of the users from pool one to one of the other pools, in this case, pool two. This is very familiar to what you're used to with move CS user or doing it through control panel, but I want to move these users from this pool and effectively evacuate them to another pool. So I move these users over to pool two, and then I perform the in-place upgrade process. I'll detail that on a few slides coming up. Once that process is complete, I now have pool run running Skype for Business 2015. Now it becomes a process where we start doing functional testing, right? Making sure that that server is operating or that pool is operating as we anticipated, all the features are working, and once all of our testing has been completed, then we can begin to move the users back to pool one that we had originally moved off, and these users will now be functional utilizing the Skype for Business Server backend. From there, it becomes a lather, rinse, repeat type exercise. So now I take pool two. This is my next target that I'm going to run the upgrade for. So of course I need to take these users and migrate them. I could migrate them to pool three. I could migrate them to pool one. Doesn't matter either way. I just need to move them off of this pool. And again, the same process moves forward. And I'll continue that process as I go through pools two and pool three. Makes life really straightforward. And again, this, as we talked about earlier, doesn't introduce downtime for the user. The move user process is very quick. Perhaps the user may see a blip if they were logged in at the time we moved them. But overall, there's no downtime from a user's perspective as we go through this method. Now, what if we look at that same method, but we're not running Link 2013? We're running Link Server 2010. Fundamentally, the concepts become the same once you've achieved the Link 2013 state. So when I look at something like pool one and pool two here, right? I have my 2010 process, 2010 pool running on pool one, 2010 on pool two. I don't have an opportunity to do an in-place upgrade. So I can't take the methodology that I looked at before and simply move users, pop the setup program in and go to town. I actually have to stand up a new pool that is running Skype for Business. This model is the traditional migration side-by-side that you had seen previously when we went from 2010 to 2013. Simply stand up a new pool, it's running Skype for Business, I do my testing as required on that particular pool, And then I move users from that particular pool, in this case pool one, over to pool three. And now I can go ahead and decommission that particular pool. Exactly as you had seen before when we did migrations from 2010 to 2013. So no real magic that we're looking at here. This is just a pretty straightforward process. Our third case, of course, is now the mixed mode. So I have 2010 pools, I have 2013 pools. Now what do? I can't introduce Skype for Business Server directly into this topology because that would cause a tri-existence scenario. And we don't have support for tri-existence, much like we haven't in the past. So my first order of business is to get down to a single version. And in this case, it makes sense to make that single version link 2013. So my first pool, pool one, go ahead and move those users from pool one over to pool three so that they're now functional on Link Server 2013. From there, it becomes a decommission process to get 2010 out of the environment. And now I'm left with a Link 2013 native platform. And then the process is exactly as we talked about two slides ago when we looked at case one. Now I have Link 2013 pools. Now I can go ahead and perform the in-place upgrade process as we had seen earlier. So moving the users from, in this case, pool three to two. Again, good idea to make sure you document which users are on which pool so that you can distribute them properly back to their own home pools. Perform my in-place upgrade, do my round of testing, make sure everything works the way I anticipate it, and then I can start moving the users that I had moved from three to two back from pool two to pool three, and then begin the process all over again. It's pretty straightforward once we get out of the tri-existence situation and get ourselves back into that single platform. All three of those cases, we're talking about the online mode method, right? So effectively, the ability for us to get users from one pool to another in the upgrade without downtime. So users don't really even notice that things are happening. There is a fourth option that you can look at, which is doing an offline mode. So quite simply being able to take my existing environment. So as you see here, I have two pools, again, both running, Link Server 2013. And now I've decided that I don't want to go through the process of moving users and moving them back and all of that fun stuff. I just simply want to upgrade them in place. And I'm willing to let the users know that there's going to be some downtime. No problem. I'll go ahead and send out maintenance notifications. In this case, I'm going to start with pool one. Again, good idea to do one pool at a time, even when you're doing the offline mode. So start with pool one in this case. I'll send maintenance notice to users. Say, perhaps it's this weekend. We're going to have a maintenance window from Friday night to maybe early Sunday morning where you will have an interruption of service for your Link environment. Once we've sent the maintenance notice to the users, then we can just go ahead and proceed with the in-place upgrade process. Now, of course, during this process, the services are stopped, and because we haven't moved the users, they're going to experience some downtime, but that's the situation that we've decided to work through in this particular case. So simply take that existing pool, go ahead and upgrade it to Skype for Business Server, of course, do your round of functional testing, make sure life is good, and then you're ready to send an email back to the user population letting them know that services are back up and running, and then you can complete this process again, lather, rinse, repeat, as we talked before, with pool two and continue on. So again, advantage of this process here is we don't have to worry about the whole moving users from one pool to the next. But the downside, of course, being that our users end up having a period where they are offline while we're performing this in-place upgrade to Skype for Business Server. So when we look at the overall upgrade process, there are a few considerations to think through. From a recommendation standpoint, everything that we've talked about up to this point has been very straightforward with regards to individual pools. But what if those pools are paired to each other? We know that in the Link 2013 space, we have the ability to pair pools for disaster recovery purposes. That's fine. We can still continue to have these pools paired. We don't want to unpair them. We want to leave them as they were in the topology. However, we do want to be cognizant of the fact that when we are doing move users, it is specifically that process, moving users. We are not failing over the pools. So we don't want to run invoke CSPool failover for these pair of pools. we simply want to be working on moving the users. So again, if I have pool A and pool B, and those are paired to each other, and I want to perform in-place upgrades, I want to take the users on pool A, for example, and actually move all of those users to pool B. Then I can go ahead and do the in-place upgrade process on pool A, get everything back and running, and then perform the process in reverse. So make sure that you don't utilize the invoke cspool failover commandlet and then perform your in-place upgrade. That's not going to work. Second point we mentioned is don't start up the services in mixed mode. Really what we're talking about here is don't start the services in a particular pool until all of the front ends in that pool have been upgraded. So for example, I don't want to have a 6 front end pool, 3 of them running 2013, 3 of them running Skype for Business Server, and try to start the pool up. That's not a wise idea. So make sure that all of the front end servers have been successfully upgraded to Skype for Business Server, then you can go ahead and start the pool itself. As I mentioned, don't unpair the pools, just simply leave them as they are. And make sure that we have some minimal time when the pools are paired with different versions. So again, if I have pools A and B, and I do an in-place upgrade of pool A, and I leave that pairing relationship in place, try to get pool B upgraded as quickly as you can, so that we don't have a long period of pool A running Skype for Business Server, but pool B still running Link Server 2013 and paired. We want to make sure that we minimize that time. When we look at an order, we want to talk about the inside-outside approach, right? So we start inside, we work on the front-end pools themselves, then we start branching our way out from the front-end pools to mediation pools, to directors, to edge, and so forth. So as we're going to see on the next slide, there's a number of different components that we have inside of Link itself that will qualify for the ability to do in-place upgrade. We did focus a lot on the front ends, but there's more than just front ends that can be in-place upgraded. And if you look here, you'll see in this table, we summarize all the various roles that we have in Link Server 2013 and which of these roles are capable of being upgraded in place to Skype for Business Server. And as you can see in the chart, we have a lot of bullets here that talk about how to do the process. I'll cover that a little bit later as we go through the slide deck. But this is a good reference to see that essentially all of the core components, the front ends, directors, mediation, edge, and so forth, are all capable of doing their in-place upgrade. Devices such as SBAs do not, and that's because they're controlled by the distributor, the manufacturer. They will take care of providing whatever mechanism they need to provide to get to the Skype for Business Server version of their SBA. The SQL Server Store we're going to cover later. We have a much more detailed discussion about that. And the final four components that you see really don't have a dependency on version, right? So our file stores, our Office web app servers, and so forth, so they don't really need to be focused on when we talk about an in-place upgrade to Skype for Business Server 2015. Now, when we talk about SQL support, there's a lot going on with regards to SQL when we start talking about Skype for Business Server. There is the concept of in-place upgrade when it comes to SQL. So when we do the in-place upgrade process for our front ends, we will seamlessly upgrade the SQL Express instances from SQL 2012 Express to SQL Express 2014. That in turn will automatically upgrade all the local copies of the database as existing on the front end servers themselves. Now, again, we're looking specifically here at the front ends. There is also the ability to handle upgrades of SQL on the back end, but I'm going to hold that discussion until we get into the always on pieces a little bit later in this presentation. So a chart here that's essentially just showing us a breakdown of the versions that we support and the feature sets that we support from a SQL perspective. And again, I'll cover this a little bit later in the deck in detail, but as a quick summary, you can see here that we do have support for mirroring still with Skype for Business Server 2015. We still have support for clustering, as we had seen before with Link Server 2013 as well, but we've now added the capability of doing always-on availability groups with Skype for Business Server. You'll notice in the chart we also have added support for SQL 2014 on the back end for Skype for Business Server itself. So more coming as we get into the always-on availability group section, but a nice handy reference chart for us to have when we're specifically looking at SQL. So when we look at in-place upgrade itself, right? We essentially went through at a high level what the process looks like. This section is kind of is meant to drive down into the detail of what's happening when we say, well, we've in-place upgraded to Skype for Business Server 2015. Well, what does that really mean? Well, it's essentially a series of five steps that we go through. Our first step, of course, is to get the prerequisites going. As always, we need to make sure that we've met all of the prerequisites that we need for the base operating system and patches and so forth, and then we can proceed with the remaining steps of upgrading, running setup, and so forth. So let's dig into step one, which is our prerequisites. If we're doing an upgrade from Link Server 2013, we need at least CU5 plus our latest hotfixes deployed in our Link 2013 topology. We also need to ensure that we have our latest RTM version of PowerShell or later. If we're using SQL Server 2012, we need Service Pack 1. And then depending on the base operating system that you're using, we have a specific set of patches that you need to ensure are provided. And you can see the KVs that are listed here. These are patches that are required for IIS to make sure that and other various components to make sure that we're set for our initial deployment of Skype for Business Server 2015. Our second step after we have our prerequisites all taken care of is to let the topology know that we're ready to do an upgrade. Once we let the topology know that we're doing an upgrade, we do our publish, we do our database upgrades, and then we get to start digging into the meat of what the actual in-place upgrade process looks like. Now, doing the actual upgrade is as simple as going into our topology builder and telling the topology, hey, I would like to upgrade this Link Server 2013 pool to Skype for Business Server 2015. Now, as always, there's a specific set of steps that we need to follow and pay very close attention to. And that specific step here is we are using, as you can see in the screenshot, the Skype for Business Server 2015 topology builder. You must use this topology builder to be able to indicate that you want to do an upgrade to Skype for Business Server 2015. Now, the trick to this, of course, is when you install the admin tools from Skype for Business Server, you need to install this on a machine which does not have any OCS Core or Link OCS Core components. So don't try to install this on your existing Link 2013 front ends. We want to take perhaps a dedicated machine or a dedicated workstation, what have you, that has never had any of the Link 2013 admin tools installed. Go ahead and then install the admin tools for Skype for Business Server 2015, load up your topology, and as you can see here, I've expanded down under Link Server 2013. You see the node for our various pools. In this case, a standard edition pool. Simply right-click it, upgrade to Skype for Business Server. In typical Microsoft fashion, you will get an Are You Sure dialog. So we want to make sure that you really did mean to upgrade this. And the reason I point this out is once you've made this change, this is actually changing the version number in the topology of this particular pool. Once that's changed and published, you're not reverting that change back. That pool is now in process to be upgraded to Skype for Business Server. So that's why we put this cautionary dialogue here to let you know you are about to take this pool and upgrade it to Skype for Business Server. If that's what you meant to do, go ahead and click yes. The first time you do that, you'll probably be a little bit freaked out by the fact that your pool will magically disappear from Topology Builder, and that's because it's no longer going to be under the Link Server 2013 node. Once you select that upgrade process, it's going to move it into the Skype for Business Server 2015 node, as you can see here in the screenshot. So it didn't actually delete your pool. It's still there. We just moved it into our Skype for Business Server 2015 node. And now we publish. It's that straightforward from the topology's perspective, right? We go ahead and publish the topology. We look for all of our green check marks, right? Life is good. And now from the topology perspective, we're now aware that our existing Link Server 2013 pool is intended to be upgraded to Skype for Business Server 2015. Now, this change in and of itself doesn't actually do anything to the front ends, right? So they're still running, they're still humming along using Link Server 2013. Through normal CMS replication, they'll pull in this new topology, but nothing's going to happen until you, as the administrator, decide that something is going to happen. And that's going to be our one of our later steps where we actually invoke the setup program. By default, we're going to go ahead and upgrade your databases for you as part of the publishing process. But as you had experienced before with Link 2013, if you need to go ahead and rerun that process, you can always do that from Topology Builder and have it go ahead and automatically upgrade your databases as necessary. Now, before you jump into step three, make sure that CMS replication has completed successfully. Right, so do our Get CS Management Store replication status, make sure that everything looks and feels synchronized, and then we can go ahead and identify the pool that we're going to be upgrading in place and go ahead and stop the services on this pool. Now again, we are diving into the gory details of the actual in-place upgrade process. Remember from our earlier discussion, we assume before you run this Stop CS Windows service that you've already moved the users to another pool, assuming you're using online mode, before you run the stop CS Windows service command. So pretty straightforward, go ahead and stop the services on all of the servers in that particular pool that's being upgraded. And then fire up setup using an administrative command prompt or elevated command prompt if you so desire, but go ahead and run setup.exe from the Skype for Business Server Media. Now the trick here, of course, is when we run this setup, because we've already performed the change in Topology Builder, we've changed the version ID or the version number of that pool to be Skype for Business Server. Setup will detect that and realize, hey, this is a pool that's being upgraded in place. As a result, the setup experience is going to be a bit different than what you've experienced previously in the Link 2013 world. Here's what it looks like. Take you through some of the snapshots. So I go ahead and run my typical Skype for Business Server setup. I'm going to be asked, do I want to look for updates? That's part of our smart setup process, which I'll detail in a couple of slides here. Our typical licensing agreement. Of course, everybody reads those in record time. If there are any updates available, we'll go ahead and pull them down and provide them as necessary. As you can see, there's no updates yet. Still working through it, right? And now look at the interface that I'm presented with. Not the typical interface that you're used to seeing when you initially launch, say, a Link Server 2013 process, where we would have the deployment wizard come up and you'd click through all the different steps. Now, setup has detected, based on the active topology, that this is a front end in a pool that has been designated for in-place upgrade. So we simply begin the in-place upgrade process, and there's my series of steps ready to roll, and each of these steps are going to proceed. What we've seen through engagements with our TAP customers and so forth is on average somewhere around 25 to 45 minutes per front end, depending on the size of the pool, to get this process moving forward. But you can see as I step through, all the various steps are being taken care of automatically by this process. So I'm taking care of taking any roles off that I need to take off, detaching databases, upgrading SQL from 2012 Express to 2014 Express, getting the admin tools reinstalled, getting the databases reattached and upgraded, getting my replica enabled, getting the various bits and binaries installed for all the various roles and so forth, and then doing my verification process, and boom, I'm done. My in-place upgrade process is complete for this particular front end. Now, of course, you're going to continue this process on your remaining front ends. And we'll give you a little dialogue at the end here that lets you know we have successfully completed the upgrade on this particular server. Now, if you have more servers in the pool, go ahead and do this process again on the remaining servers in the pool. Don't start anything yet, right? We mentioned earlier, we don't want to start in a mixed mode. So again, if I have three front ends in my pool and this is front end number one, I don't want to start any services on this front end yet because I haven't upgraded front ends two and three. Go ahead and continue this process on front end two, front end three. Once you've successfully completed this process on all of your front ends in this particular pool, then you can go ahead and start the pool itself. Now we've made it a little bit easier for you in the Skype for Business Server world to start the pool. You still have the option, as we show in this screenshot here, to do the start CS Windows service commandlet, but we've also added a new commandlet called Start CS Pool. So now when we utilize the Start CS Pool commandlet, we can simply go to one of the front ends, simply say, type in Start CS Pool, give it the pool name, and we're off and running. This commandlet will go out and start all of the various services on all of the respective front ends of the pool, negating the need for you to actually go and connect to each front end and run a Start CS Windows service or start using the computer name parameter and so forth. We can simply run the one commandlet and let the commandlet, with all of the intelligence that's built into it, go ahead and get all of the bits and bytes started for that particular pool. It's a very straightforward last step for us. This is all culminating towards an idea that we have called smart setup, right? And smart setup is basically allowing for server updates to be installed as part of the setup process, right? Like what we had seen earlier. So we launch the setup and it says, hey, do you want us to check to see if there's any updates available through Microsoft Update to help streamline that particular deployment process, right? And this should be a very familiar concept that you've seen in other Microsoft products and Microsoft solutions that we have. This is just part of that methodology, right? This doesn't replace our server update installer, which you see when we release cumulative updates, right? We still have that mechanism for applying CUs. This is not meant to replace that, right? That is still useful for, you know, customers that maybe don't have access to the internet and pulling that down from Windows Update, where they can simply download that offline update, if you will, and patch it in the traditional manner. That's still available for us. We can do that. But we do have this mechanism that we're trying to build into our smart setup. We'll also get a chance a little later in this deck to talk about that whole patching process and how we've improved that methodology, but more to come on that in just a little bit. So now we want to do a quick context shift and talk about SQL Always On, a new feature that we've provided support for with Skype for Business Server 2015. Now, some of you may be familiar with what Always On is, but we'll take a quick moment to give you a little recap and an overview of what SQL Always On is. It is a high availability technology that is provided by SQL Server. It's effectively the next generation mirroring technology that we have, giving us the ability to do both high availability and disaster recovery from a SQL perspective. Now, we will be focusing on that from a high availability perspective when we talk about it in context of Skype for Business Server. This feature was introduced in SQL 2012. It, of course, exists in SQL 2014 as well. And its foundation is Windows Server failover clustering. So if you're familiar with concepts like database availability groups or DAGs in the Exchange world, which leverage Windows Server failover clustering, this is very similar in concept, where we're using failover clustering as our foundation to implement this high availability feature. So why do I care about Always On? What's the big deal? Well, it has some major advantages from an HA perspective, notwithstanding the fact, of course, it is the latest and greatest shiny HA solution. It provides a much more robust set of controls and features than what we had in, say, database mirroring. Now, database mirroring is still there. It's still available. It's still supported. You can still continue to use it. But as has been mentioned a number of times, it is a deprecated feature. So at some point, it's going to be removed from a future release of SQL Server in favor of technologies like Always On. It's more reliable in the sense that from Always On's perspective, you can have a defined primary and up to three corresponding secondaries from an HA perspective, whereas mirroring, it was a one-to-one, right? You had a one was the primary, one was the mirror, and that was it. The other advantage it provides us is the ability to fail over multiple databases as a singular unit, right? So applications that have several databases, like Skype for Business Server, right, has lots of databases. It's advantageous for us to ensure that those databases are failed over as a single unit, right? So that we don't end up with, oh, a couple of the databases are primary on this node, but a couple of other databases are primary on that node. We don't ideally want that. Everything should be in lockstep with what particular node it's active on. All of that is done by defining what we call an availability group, which will all be failed over as a particular unit. And you'll see as we go through the slides in a little bit how that's going to impact our link deployment. This is a visual representation of what Always On looks like, right? In this particular instance, you can see that there's actually three nodes available for us. These nodes are each running Windows Server failover clustering. They each have their own SQL Server instance. And then we've defined the availability group on top of this particular configuration. This gives us the ability to effectively define this group of databases, as the term will be an availability group, right? And then fail them as a unit between various nodes that are defined inside of this availability group. As you might expect, and you can see on the slide here, each of these SQL instances are independent of each other, meaning they have their own storage, they are their own node, they have their own instance name, right? They are basically their own standalone SQL Server instance. When we define the availability group, that's when we effectively configure them to work together as one, right? But they are effectively three separate entities that we have defined. From Link's perspective, we will support one primary and two secondary replicas in what we call synchronous commit mode, which I'll detail in a little bit. I call this out because if you recall from our previous slide, we have more nodes that we can support in an availability group from SQL's perspective. But when we look at it specifically in the context of Skype for Business Server, we're going to support a maximum of one primary and two secondaries. Now, contrast this always on availability group that you see with this, the failover cluster instance. The difference here, as you can see, is we still have three nodes, but notice at the bottom, we actually have shared storage. We have in the middle a shared failover cluster instance, right? This is your traditional clustering model, and it has its advantages, of course, but we are now tied to that single copy of data, right? That one set of shared storage that we will utilize for the failover cluster instance. We can still provide support for this, no problem. But it's good to contrast this with what we looked at earlier, which was the ability to have our availability group acting and coordinating across three independent instances of SQL. So now the overview's kind of out of the way. What do we have to consider when we're planning for always-on support? Well, my favorite answer as a consultant is it depends. But it really does. It depends of when you're looking at planning for always-on, is this a new install, meaning am I building a brand new pool with a brand new SQL backend, or am I doing an upgrade, as we mentioned earlier, right? Am I upgrading the existing pool to Skype for Business Server, and I want to make a change to the backend topology? Perhaps I was using mirroring before, and now I want to use always-on availability groups in Skype for Business Server. So the two scenarios, if it's new, it's pretty straightforward, right? We install our new backend with pick your flavor of SQL 2012, 2014. Notice it does have to be enterprise, right? Enterprise edition is required for always-on availability groups from a SQL perspective. Get our backends deployed, install the pool, point it to the backend always-on availability group, and away we go. Very, very high level. I'll cover it in more detail as we go. From an upgrade scenario, again, I have a 2013 pool today, and now I want to go ahead and end game, get to Skype for Business Server 2015 with SQL always on availability groups as the backend. You can do that, but you must first upgrade the pool itself to Skype for Business Server before you do anything with the backend. So again, say for example, your backend is a standalone SQL instance, or perhaps it's a mirror, and you want to get it to always on availability groups. You have to start with the Skype for Business Server piece first. Once you've upgraded the pool successfully to Skype for Business Server, then you can tackle the back end and get that migrated to an always-on availability group. And this is specifically because always-on availability groups are only supported with Skype for Business Server. So what do we require from a SQL standpoint? Well, as you can see, standalone can be either standard or enterprise edition SQL. If you're doing failover clustering, it depends how many nodes you want, right? Standard or enterprise is capable of doing two nodes, whereas enterprise edition is required for three or more. We're already aware from our 2013 days that mirroring can use standard or enterprise. But when you look at the new option, always on availability groups, you do need to have enterprise edition of SQL to be able to build an always on availability group. So taking that information and putting it in chart form, right? You can kind of see here, if we break out the various topologies that we have, Server 2010, Server 2013, and Skype for Business Server, you can see which availability technologies we support, which versions we support, and what the various combinations are. Again, the key takeaway from this particular slide is with Skype for Business Server, we've introduced support for SQL 2014, as well as support for always-on availability groups. Those components have not been extended back into, say, Link Server 2013. So no availability group support there, and no SQL 2014 support at this time. Now, we also mentioned that availability groups, from SQL's perspective, have a lot of permutations on how you can configure the always-on availability group. Well, when you look at it in the context of Skype for Business Server, there are very specific requirements that we have, and you can see them listed here on the slide, but I'll give you a quick recap as you're reading through them. First off, our replicas need to be in the same subnet. Yes, always-on availability groups do support stretching themselves from a DR perspective between physical locations. We're not focused on that from Link's or Skype for Business Server's perspective. We're focused on the high availability aspect, which would be within a single site. So our replicas need to be within the same subnet. We have to use the synchronous commit mode. This includes automatic failover. We don't have support for read access for secondary replicas, right? It is possible when you build an availability group to say, I want this copy to be primary, I want this to be a secondary, and I want this to be a readable secondary, so I could run reports or queries or what have you against it. That's not a topology that we support with Skype for Business Server. We also don't support an offsite replica in Azure, right? That is an option when you go to configure the availability group. Hey, would you like to put a copy of this up in Azure? No, not from the Skype for Business Server perspective. Now, all of these requirements that we give you here, they're not actively blocked if you try to do something different, right? So if you try to build a readable secondary or you try to change the availability mode to something else, we're not going to actively block you, but it's not a supported topology. So the best recommendation is to stick with the supported configurations that we've outlined here, which will give you the greatest chance for success with your Skype for Business Server deployment. Now, we did mention that it is possible to do in-place upgrade from SQL's perspective, right? Not just from the front ends, but also from SQL's perspective. That is true for us to in-place upgrade to an always-on availability group, but first of all, we have to realize that it has to be a Skype for Business Server pool, right? Because again, if you remember, Link Server 2013 doesn't have support for SQL 2014, nor does it have support for availability groups. So first and foremost, get yourself to Skype for Business Server on the front ends. Then you can start investigating how you want to get from whatever your existing deployment is today, SQL 2012, mirror, standalone, cluster, what have you, into an always-on availability group in 2014. Clearly, we'd like you to do a full database backup before you do any in-place upgrade. Always need to make sure that we have that particular fallback plan. And then once you've completed the upgrade, you can actually go and change the version of the database, either through the management interface itself in the GUI, or you can utilize the alter database command and change your compatibility level to 120. And that will update the database versioning to SQL Server 2014. So let's talk about some of the prereqs and dependencies to be able to make SQL Always On work with Skype for Business Server. First off, as we mentioned, you need to have Windows Server failover clustering as your foundation. This, of course, requires Server 2008 R2 SP1 or higher to be able to run our failover cluster from Skype for Business Server's perspective. We then need to get this feature installed, whatever number of nodes we want, whether it's 1, 2, 3. When you define this cluster, you'll be given the option to define what the quorum should look like. We recommend that you do a file share witness option for this particular quorum for the cluster itself. And then standard clustering recommendations apply, right? The nodes can't be domain controllers. They have to be in the same AD domain. They have to be on the same subnet, right? So that's our failover clustering requirements, and that's our foundation for building the always-on availability group. As again, we mentioned from SQL's perspective, looking at the server and the database itself, we need to ensure that we have Enterprise Edition or better. Depending on what you've chosen, whether it's an availability group or what we call an FCI or a failover cluster instance, right? You're going to have the opportunity to break down what the install looks like, right? So if it's an availability group, we basically start with standalone SQL installations. And then you configure always on after the fact. If it's a failover cluster instance, you actually have to follow the specific prescriptive guidance for defining a SQL Server failover cluster install, starting with your first node and then adding nodes right into the deployment. Availability groups are much more straightforward because, as mentioned earlier, they are independent SQL installs. So if we take the example of having three particular nodes in my always-on availability group, I'm simply going to install three SQL instances on three independent systems. Once those are defined, then I can go ahead and enable always-on. It's a simple checkbox for us to go ahead and check to enable the always-on availability service and get that up and running and restarted. In order for always-on to work, our databases have to be in full recovery model. If you recall, when we install databases from Skype for Business Server or for Link, they're typically put in the simple recovery model. So you will want to change those from simple to full. You will be required to do a full database backup, and that's going to be part of the what we call seeding process for the always-on availability group, right? Making sure that initially we have one instance that has the databases deployed, and then we use backup restore methodologies as part of the wizard that the availability group uses to seed the databases onto the remaining nodes. And lastly, your database folder structure needs to be duplicated across all of your availability group replicas. So the folder structure that you use on your first SQL instance that's going to contain all of your linked databases needs to be identical. And you can use a simple xcopy command to do that. You want to be copying the directories, not the data itself. We don't actually need to copy all of the databases themselves. You just need to replicate the folder structure across the various availability group replicas. And from that perspective, it becomes pretty straightforward to then manage and utilize the always-on availability group from within the SQL management tools. Okay, let's take a little shift and talk about the management aspect. So we've achieved our upgrade. So we're now running Skype for Business Server 2015. We've taken care of our high availability option on the back end from SQL's perspective, so now we have our always-on availability group, and now things are in a steady state, and now we're ready to start looking at the patching process and understanding what's changed, what's better in our Skype for Business Server patching methodology. And to be able to appreciate the patching process in Skype for Business Server, we have to take a bit of a step back and look at the history of where we've come from. So a lot of you should be familiar with this little flowchart. No, I don't expect you to read it. But this flowchart kind of shows the steps that we would need to go through to perform patching in Link Server 2013. And there was a lot, right? There was a lot of steps. It was not clearly defined what those steps were doing, right? So we had this wonderful command of get CS pull upgrade readiness state that really just kind of gave you binary, yes, I'm ready, no, I'm not. And effectively, if you weren't ready, we basically said, wait. And after consuming a lot of coffee, you might come back and still have to wait some more. So there was a lot of challenges related to how this process worked. What was an upgrade domain and how does that even work, and how does that fall into things? We ended up having customers rolling servers and getting multiple systems down, multiple upgrade domains down, and suddenly impacting service to their end user population. And it just became a bit of a challenge for us to be able to take what we were supplying in cumulative updates and get them efficiently applied to our Link 2013 pools. So as you can see, lots of steps. Upgrade domain concept that wasn't clearly communicated as to what that even was, let alone how I figure out how to work with it. We had to do all these checks, stop services, patch, move on, figure out the next upgrade. It became a bit challenging to get this process nice and smooth. And especially if you were dealing with systems at scale, and we ended up with, say, 12 front ends, this process could take hours, 10 hours, 12 hours, just to patch one of our front-end pools, notwithstanding, of course, the old wait and try concept. So we started to look at what were those reliability challenges, and how could we improve that scenario in Skype for Business Server? So yes, it's a complex process, lots of steps. And if you deviated from those steps, or you became impatient and you tried to do more than one thing at a time or tried to multitask, you could end up getting yourself into a situation where the pool either went down for some users, for all users, or you just simply couldn't even get the pool to start because the front ends would go into their ever popular starting state and then just go away. And that was not really a good reliable mechanism for us to use for patching. If you ended up in a situation where you couldn't start your front-end servers after patching, what could you do, right? Again, it became more of a wait-and-try scenario, or reboot it again, and sometimes customers were resorting to drastic steps like resetting the fabric or resetting the pool state and all things that contributed to actually making the situation worse rather than better. You may end up in situations where users were signed in with limited functionality, and you're going, wait a second, I have 8 front ends in this pool. I only took 2 of them down. Why am I experiencing limited functionality for these users? Why do they get performance issues related to sign-in? I don't understand why this is doing what it's doing. And a lot of that was based on how the fundamental technologies of Windows Fabric and so forth worked in Link Server 2013. This, of course, led to things being much harder to troubleshoot, much more difficult to solve, especially when you got in larger pools, right? Because now suddenly you're dealing on a scale of 10 to 12 hours, and if something's not starting properly, doing a drastic, oh, I'll just reboot the pool, doesn't really fit the bill. If you didn't have this solid understanding of upgrade domains or other areas related to Windows Fabric, a lot of it just kind of went straight over your head. I just don't know. It's a black box. It's not working. And I just want my services to work. I just want it to be fixed, right? Besides all of those, you know, bullets, why did it become a problem? Well, quite frankly, we gave you a command, and that command didn't really give you a lot of feedback. It just simply let you know whether we were ready to roll or not. Sometimes it told you it was ready to roll, and it really wasn't, because there was some information that wasn't coming back properly to the commandlet, and we didn't give you safeguards to prevent you from getting yourself into a situation where you've introduced downtime. The load balancing itself continued to be the decision point. Are the routing groups, you know, active and hydrated properly? And have we taken down more than one upgrade domain, which would impede the ability for us to have this load balanced properly? That, you know, that became this decision point for how we execute upgrades. And most people didn't even understand what the fabric was underneath. It was just this black box of press the I believe button and it works. It didn't work out so well for us when we were trying to do these patching methodologies. There was an idle secondary bug, or as we call them, undocumented feature, right, that was available in our previous versions of Windows Fabric, which we patched recently. And again, incorrect use of some commandlets would make things worse, right? The reset CSPool registrar state would commonly be a solution that would be offered up when you couldn't get services to start. And that's essentially taking a sledgehammer to the pool, and oftentimes would result in extended periods of downtime because it would introduce even more problems than what we were dealing with earlier. Okay, so enough of the doom and gloom, right? But it's good to understand a little bit about where we came from, because then we can further appreciate what we've improved in the Skype for Business Server world. So let's look at how we patch. You can see on the left the old, and you can see on the right the new. Much more streamlined process, right? We don't have this big decision tree of what about this and where do I go for that and what does this step look like? And I've decided I want to patch. I have a commandlet that I run, which we'll talk about in detail coming up here. I perform the upgrade. I fail it back, I go to town with the next process, and the next process. And I do this for each front end, and off we go. It's a much more streamlined option that we have as we go through the patching process. As you can see on the next slide here, all of this is made possible by the fact that we've actually changed the version of Windows Fabric that we're using under the hood. Right? Previously with Link Server 2013, we used V1. With Skype for Business Server, we're utilizing Windows Fabric V2 APIs, which is a much richer set of APIs that are available to us, allowing us to expose a lot of additional functionality that we just simply didn't have access to in the previous Fabric V1 world. All right, so as we mentioned in the previous slide, there's essentially four steps that we look through. Let's talk about them in a little bit greater detail. First off, we have a new commandlet, a new series of commandlets that we introduced. First one being invoke cscomputer failover. And this is a new commandlet that's designed to effectively failover and drain a front-end server so that it is prepared to be patched, right? Take it out of the rotation, any replicas that it's a primary for, you know, move those replicas off, make sure that secondary replicas are reseated elsewhere, and effectively get that computer into a state where it is ready to be patched, and working with that individual system is not going to cause any type of disruption or outage to your end user population on that pool. Then I can go ahead and perform my patching, perform my upgrade with, you know, my Link Server Update installer as we had done previously. And once I've got that system back and ready, the patches have been successfully applied, then I simply run another commandlet that we've introduced called invoke cscomputer fail back, which is essentially the ability for us to bring the services back, bring him into an active state, and get replicas moved back onto this, whether they be primary or secondary, but get replicas seeded back onto this front end and put him back in service. Then it becomes, as we mentioned earlier, more of a lather, rinse, repeat exercise. Now I follow these same steps on the next front end in the pool, and so on and so forth. So at a very high level, much more streamlined process. As we dig a bit deeper, we discover that when we look at commandlets like invoke cscomputer failover, it's not just draining the services and getting it ready. It's providing us with a number of checks and balances on the back end. So number one, do I have availability of a sufficient number of servers in the pool? Right? If I decide that I'm going to run this command and it's going to take a server out of service, is that going to negatively impact the performance of the pool? Am I going to drop below a minimum number of servers that I need to maintain service? That sanity check is built into this commandlet. I'm going to ensure that I have stability of my replicas before I take the server offline, right? So again, getting us in that steady state so I don't end up in a situation where I'm taking the server out of service and one of the routing groups that he was servicing, his primary replica didn't evacuate properly or didn't get reseeded properly to another system. We're going to make sure that all of our replicas exist properly and are stable before we take the server down. We will then deactivate the node by making calls into the V2 APIs in Windows Fabric, right? So not just doing a stop CS Windows service and, hey, the Skype for Business Server services are stopped, fire away. No, actually calling into these APIs and letting the Fabric tell us, yes, it's good. I now see that this system has been deactivated from the ring, and now I'm ready to go and get this system patched properly. Right, so call these V2 APIs via the Fabric, deactivate it from the ring, stop the Skype for Business Server services once we've achieved success or a successful notification from the Fabric APIs, and now we're ready to rock and roll and get our patches installed. Now, that's all the really, really good news, right? There's, of course, a little bit of bad news that comes along with invoke cscomputer failover. And the little bit of bad news is that we need a minimum of 3 front-end servers in the pool to be able to run this commandlet. So as we had stated, you know, before in Link Server 2013 deployments, it is still supported to do a 2 front-end pool, but it's much more advantageous to have a minimum of 3. And this is another reason why it's much more advantageous to have a minimum of 3 front ends in the pool, because you can now then take advantage of all of the intelligence and checks and balances that are built into Invoke CS Computer Failover. Now, there are instances where you may run this commandlet and perhaps we can't successfully deactivate the node, or we get some other type of systemic event that happens. There are timeouts built in to these commandlets, about an hour, where if we've run this and we can't successfully deactivate the node, we'll actually get a response back from the system letting us know that, you know, the fabric node couldn't finish its transition into a disabled state, right? That's a response that we can get from the API letting us know that, hey, something's going on with this particular node, and I wasn't able to continue, so I'm not going to stop the link or Skype for Business server services because I didn't successfully deactivate the node itself. Of course, failing back is a lot less entertaining of an option, but it's a viable option that we need to look through, right? And that's Invoke CS Computer Failback. Clearly, we're going to start the services up and make sure that they start successfully, and then we're going to activate this node back into the ring. And now we will, because he's active in the ring, now the fabric will be able to consider him for replica placement and start looking at hydrating routing groups and routing group replicas onto this particular node now that his services have started and he's been successfully activated back into the ring. So what's better about it? Well, clearly, the first thing that's better is it's a simpler workflow, right? Providing operations folks and IT administrators a flow chart that has about, you know, 5 or 6 different decision trees in it with lots of wait and see commands doesn't usually go over so well. So providing a simpler, more streamlined workflow with fewer commands to run, with fewer errors, that's ideal, right? And that's why it's definitely a better opportunity. We've also, because of the APIs that we're utilizing, we've improved the performance of this process. So now, when we're looking at a 12 FE pool, we're averaging about 2 to 3 hours for patching the entire pool versus 8 to 12 hours that we were seeing before. So massive improvement on getting the patches applied safely and efficiently to our front-end pools. It's also more reliable because we have more intelligence built into these commands. And again, this is all possible with these new APIs that we have available in Fabric V2. So looking for readiness across the pool. So not just being myopic and looking at ourselves as a singular server, but looking across the pool and figuring out, are we ready? Am I successfully deactivated from the ring? Do we have stability with the replicas that are being pushed across these nodes? That in and of itself becomes a more dependable operation, right? The moving of replicas back and forth, the primaries, the secondaries, and so forth. That was one of the big sticking points that we had in previous iterations in Link Server 2013. You would take down multiple copies of a particular routing group replica, and then suddenly your users would go into reduced functionality mode, and you're kind of scratching your head going, but the pool is up. I only took down 2 servers. I don't understand why these users are having this issue. Well, a lot of it had to do with what was going on under the hood with Fabric. We want to take a lot of that and take that abstraction layer away and just make it more of a dependable operation and less of a what I would term a nerd knob type discussion, right? Where we have to get down and understand how these replicas are being seeded. Since we're dealing with one front end at a time, we avoid the situation where I could take down multiple front ends and in turn take down multiple upgrade domains, which could in turn take down some of the user services. So we've scoped this commandlet to an individual front end. So we don't have to have a situation where we have multiple servers in the pool that are down, which can lead to a challenge for our end user population. We've built more intelligence to look across the pool and see if the replicas are healthy in a steady state. And if they're not, we're not going to proceed. We don't want to make the situation worse by failing over a server when we've already determined that we have replica issues inside the pool. So we'll provide feedback in the sense that we've identified that there are replica issues in the pool. Let's go address those. Let's fix that before we decide to fail over a server and possibly introduce a much more detrimental situation. We will also enforce that minimum number of servers. It's implicit, right? It's built into the commandlet to go and check and see do I have the bare minimum number of servers online to be able to perform this operation? So again, taking away the need for the administrator to have to remember how many servers do I need up in a pool, and are we talking about pool quorum? Are we talking about routing group quorum? Are we there's too many moving parts to get that piece consistently deployed. So we're going to enforce a lot of those checks and balances in these commandlets. And then, of course, we're going to give you some progress indicators. That's kind of an obvious but nice addition, is for us to be able to actually know what's going on and not just simply running a commandlet and hoping that this commandlet's going to finish properly, but giving you progress indicators as to what's happening and what's going on. And here you can see a couple of examples of a snapshot in time of what it looks like running the invoke cscomputer failover commandlet or the invoke cscomputer fail back commandlets, right? So being able to see, hey, I'm waiting for the fabric node status update, right? I'm waiting for that feedback from the V2 API to tell me that I've been successfully deactivated from the ring. Then I can go and start turning services off, preventing new sessions, stopping services, and then I can go ahead and do my patching and so forth. And then as you see in cscomputer fail back, getting the services back up and running, making sure that they're in all the various services that need to start and so forth. So ensuring that we've got a healthy, steady environment before we go and introduce the system back into service. Those are all cool components that we talked through. But of course, in order to be able to leverage this, we have some prerequisites. You have to be running Skype for Business Server, which in turn will be installing Fabric version 2.0. In this case, we mentioned CU3+. You don't have to be terribly concerned about that particular component because we will take care of installing the correct version of Fabric when you do the installation of Skype for Business Server. As we mentioned before, the unit is a single server, right? So we don't want to be running these invoke cscomputer failover commandlets on multiple servers at the same time. In most cases, it'll block because we're still in process of taking a server down or a server is already down, and we don't want to introduce instability into the pool. When you run invoke cscomputer failover, right, we expect that the RTC service is still running. So, I mean, again, traditionally you may be thinking in the 2013 days, oh, I'm going to patch this, I'll do a stop CS window service graceful, and then I'll start, well, with Skype for Business Server, a little different, right? In Skype for Business Server, we want to use these invoke commandlets. It will take care of stopping the services when it needs to stop them. So don't stop the RTC service ahead of time and then try to run invoke cscomputer failover, right? Because as we talked about earlier, part of the chain of process that we go through is to deactivate ourselves from the fabric ring first and then stop services. And there's a specific reason why we follow that particular process. So you should follow that as well. The invoke cscomputer fail back is going to start the RTC service for you. And that's because when you've completed the patching and all of that fun stuff, typically at that point, the service is either in a stopped and or disabled state. Right. When you do the failover command, if you go and look in services, you'll actually see that we not only stop, but also disable the services. That way, if you have some type of unexpected reboot or what have you, the services don't auto start when you didn't expect them to. So running invoke cscomputer fail back will reverse that situation. Right. You should not be doing any type of stopping of services outside of this commandlet. Right. So as we mentioned, you don't need to follow the stop CS Windows service graceful. You don't need to do any of that anymore in the Skype for Business Server world. All of it should be managed through these two specific commandlets. One of the last items in server management is to kind of review the pool cold start piece, which we briefly talked about at the beginning of this session. But now we'll take a little bit of a deeper look at this commandlet and what it's capable of doing. There's a couple of scenarios in which you're going to be looking at utilizing this commandlet. The most obvious one, of course, being I've just done an in-place upgrade. Right? So we talked at the beginning of the session about how we do the in-place upgrade process from 2013 to Skype for Business. And now that I've completed the in-place upgrade, I have to start all the services all at once. Perfect opportunity to use this start CS pool commandlet. Of course, if I want to add a new pool from scratch, great time to use this. Pool failback, starting a pool if it's offline. Any other miscellaneous cases where you decide to take down the pool for maintenance and you didn't pay attention to anything I just said in the previous slide, then you might need to go ahead and use Start CS Pool. But generally speaking, the first two are the most common ones that you're going to see. So some of the problems that we had when we tried to do a cold start of a pool in the Link 2013 space. Well, all the servers needed to be started all at the same time, right? And we had this table on TechNet that actually showed, based on the number of servers in the pool, there was a minimum number of servers that needed to be up. And typically that was represented as 85% of the pool. Sometimes math is hard. And you know, 85%, how many? Well, I'm just going to start them all. I don't know. We'll just start everything. And then it became confusing as to, well, do I start them all at once? Or do I start them within a couple of minutes of each other? Or do I do them in sequence? Or do I have to do them in reverse order? And it just became very confusing to figure out how I get this pool to come up and not have it sit with the front-end services starting for 3 hours. I wanted to get this thing up and running, right? If you decided, well, I don't want to start all 12 FUs in the pool. Maybe I only want to start 8 of them. Which 8 do I start? Does it matter which 8 I start? There is routing group quorum loss recovery issues that have to be taken into account. If something didn't start correctly, we would often give you this generic error of, you know, hey, we couldn't hydrate one of our routing groups. Okay, that's great. Well, how do I fix that? Why am I waiting for this replica to be placed? Why isn't it being placed? What is not working properly? And if it's not working properly, can't you just automatically fix it for me? And all of these culminated in scenarios where customers would try to start their Link 2013 pool, and it either would take an eternity to start and then fail, or take an eternity to start and then not completely start with the various services on the front ends or the various hydration of routing groups. So we decided that probably wasn't an optimal experience. And we decided to fix that by saying, all right, if I want to start a Skype for Business server pool cold, how do I do it? Well, run one command. So instead of trying to do start CS Windows service across 12 servers, and get that to happen all at once, which is a challenge, right? Let's just give you one commandlet that says, start the pool and go to town. Better yet, let's put some intelligence in that commandlet. So that commandlet is not just saying, hey, go to all of these servers in the pool and start their services. Sure, that's an obvious piece, but let's put some intelligence in there. If some of the routing group replicas get stuck for some reason, let's move on. Let's skip them and get the services started, because invariably you don't want to be involved in a situation where you have 12 front end servers and none of the services start, all because one routing group wouldn't hydrate. And that one routing group has like 5 users in it and they're test users and nobody cares about it. Right. We've got the entire pool down now because of that. Well, let's be a little bit more intelligent about that. Let's let the pool start, even if we have some issues with routing group replica placement. If we do end up and have issues, it'd be kind of nice to alert you that we have issues and, imagine this, provide you with some resolution steps, right? Other than reboot the server or, you know, run reset CS pool registrar state, not a viable option, right? Let's give some more intelligent feedback to the administrator. So here it is, our start CS pool command. Now, of course, prereq checks. This is a commandlet that works against Skype for Business server pools. So you can't run this commandlet against your 2013 pools. This is specifically against Skype for Business server pools because it utilizes, again, API calls into WinFab 2.0 and so forth. So this is the sequence of events that we go through, right? Start them up. Start all the servers in the pool. Start checking to see if we're having problems. Get some extended diagnostics going. Give us an alert back in the PowerShell command to say, hey, there's a problem with this particular system, right? Maybe you look at it and, oh yeah, that server's not going to start because it's not powered on. And maybe I don't have an opportunity to power on. That's fine. We give you parameters like the -skip server parameter, for example. So you can say start CS pool -skip server and put an exclusion list in. And we'll try to start services on all the other servers except that one. If you get a little bit too creative, right, and put too many servers in that skip server list and you don't now have enough servers to achieve quorum, we're going to fail this commandlet because that's one of our checks that we do. You've got 12 servers in the pool. You've excluded 8 of them. Yeah, that's not going to work. We're not going to be able to start a pool of 12 with only 4 servers. So we'll fail that requirement and give you some feedback for that. Is this operation going to require quorum loss recovery? Perhaps, again, we get into a situation where we're starting up not all of the servers in the pool, and Fabric determines that, we're going to have to do quorum loss recovery. Do you want me to do that? Sure, I'd love for you to do that. And me not have to run reset syspool registrar state with quorum loss recovery? I'd love for you to do that. Thank you. Okay, what if that results in data loss? Well, we'll provide that feedback to you as well. Hey, if there's no data loss, I'm going to go ahead and do it for you. If I think there's going to be data loss, then I'm going to ask the admin that's running this commandlet, do you really want me to do this? All right? Because if I do it and there is data loss, that's going to have an impact to your end user population. Is that a risk that you're willing to accept? Yes or no? Maybe specific routing group replicas are having problems and you just want to skip them. We can go ahead and do that as well. You don't want to run quorum loss recovery. You don't want there to be data loss, so you'd rather just skip it for now and let me go dig into it a little bit deeper, perhaps on my own or perhaps with Premier, and figure out actually what's going on. But go ahead and start everything else. Let the rest of the 95% of the user population do their thing while I go fix what's wrong with this last set of data. And of course, we get through all of that decision tree and no other issues found. Everything's up and running and life is good. So much more streamlined mechanism for us to actually get the pool started up and running. And that's it. That's our content for managing and upgrading Skype for Business Server 2015. It's a quick recap. Yeah, again, 3 major areas that we focused on. Getting our upgrade process moving through, whether that is through an in-place upgrade mechanism, for example, from 2013, or whether it's via our upgrade paths that we had from our coexistence mode or straight from 2010. We also looked at our improvements that we've added for SQL and talked about our always-on availability group support. And finally, we ended with our server management process. So a good look into what we've improved from a patching perspective and also some of the improvements that we've made with the ability to start the pool cold. So I hope you've enjoyed this presentation. Thank you for your time.